time there's a deal, I just buy it.
Good evening. Welcome to night number two. I want to thank City Winery for having us here for a couple of nights here in your beautiful, beautiful town. I love Chicago so much. And we've been having a great time. And those of you who weren't here last night, I'm so glad you're here tonight. So thank you for coming. About that day before I leave for a tour, and it's always kind of sucks around my house, because everybody's just grumpy as shit. And the kids see the suitcase and they know what it means, and if it's a big suitcase, they know what that means too, and so they're just find ways to act up, and my wife She's such a good sport about what I do, and is so supportive and enables me to do this. But that one day, it's like one day once a month, you know, where she's just foul. It's the last day on earth that I want her to be foul, because I'm about to be gone for 3 weeks. It's like, good God, you know. So I wrote this song about it in a fit of just, played it for her and she cried. But now it's like one of her favorite songs of mine. So anyway, I want to send this one out to them back home. This song is called Leaving Time.
Expected in the worst of spaces, almost gone.
we weren't allowed to sell any kind of liquor or beer in the town I grew up in. But there is a strange quirk in the blue wall that labeled the county just across the Tennessee River to the south of us, Colbert County. It enabled them to be able to open on Monday morning at 12:01 for exactly 1 hour and 59 minutes. And many of us would see each other in the parking lot. Ourselves the 1201 Club. It's 1201. Rain and wipers playing space on. And I'm driving across the bone with my wipers on to where the liquor laws are different. Trucker song that the Drive-By Truckers played about 5 times ever. and that's probably including the take or two I took in the studio. So. It just didn't really fit the show, you know. It's a song that I felt real strongly connected to, but it just didn't fit in that format between, you know, wedged between Lookout Mountain and Sinkhole or something. It seemed out of place, but it's something I wrote about my family, which the new record that I'm out playing with behind is pretty much all revolves around my family and very personal songs about it. And so this song has kind of felt like a glove in this show, so we've been playing it on this, and it's about my, she would have been my first cousin once removed. Her name was Bonnie, and I grew up with her younger brother and Tommy, and that's who I rode go-karts with, and we grew up just like brothers. He was 2 years older than me, and his older sister Carol, and his mom and dad were like kind of like the patriarch and matriarch of our extended family, And so it was all interconnected, and I never got to meet Monty, but I wrote this song about her. It's called Little Bonnie.
Woo!
Paige Campbell, also known as Hope for Golden Summer. Present these songs to people all over the country with such a kick-ass band, and I'm so thankful for all of them agreeing to go on this new adventure. We're having a really wonderful time, and it's been a really special week and a half so far, and we're looking forward to the rest of it. We plow west starting early in the morning, so. This record, I wasn't planning on making a record. I gotta be honest with you. I've been pretty busy the last 16 years, and we had decided a long time ago that 2012 is gonna be like hiatus for the band, and we just need some time. We need some time off the road and with our families, and you know, and time to re-energize and live some life so that we can write about life. You can't write about life if you don't live in it. And of course, what you don't realize is all that time you're actually living. So shit's happening. And I had this idea I was going to write this book because I don't have enough to do. And it seemed like a It's just a good outlet for me. If I'm on the road or whatever I'm doing, that's how I deal with whatever angst I've got at any given moment is to write. And so as I well, I'm on tour, I don't want to make another record, so I'm gonna write a book. And I had an idea for a story, and it's loosely based on when I was 27, 28, 29, those really, really bumpy years in so many people's lives, especially people who do this for a living. But I think it's bumpy for everybody, though, because you wake up one day and you're 27 and you realize, oh, shit, I'm not going to do all that shit by 30 that seemed so important at the time to swear you were going to do, and you might be facing student loans or your parents expecting you to perform up to some standard or something, and you wake up at 27, and here's the fuck up. I'm as big a fuck up now as I was at 17, except now I'm not 17. I don't look as good doing it. Nobody wants to take a picture of me fucking up now, unless they can use it against me. So I was going to write that book, I've put it aside for a while. I'm not ready to go there and visit for that long, but I did visit long enough to pull out a few songs, and then that inspired some other songs about totally different shit that I've been playing. And so anyway, that's how we ended up with a record, and I'm out on the road with it. And so that's all leading to this. This song is one of the ones directly inspired by the book, because the one of the main characters in the book was a character named Billy Ringo. And I'm not gonna lie to you and tell you I completely made him up, because he's a composite of a couple people, but he's especially a composite of one person. Billy Ringo's the most fun guy in the world to go out taking pills and drinking and carousing with, and you can't have more fun than a night out with Billy Ringo. But at the same time, it's gonna suck tomorrow. And that's kind of a good symbolism for the whole relationship, because he's going to break your heart. He's going to fuck you over. He's going to fuck your old lady if he gets a chance. He'll fuck your sister if he gets a chance. He'll even fuck your mama if it seems like a good idea to him at the moment. And you just know it's going to happen. And so you have to take those friends as they are. You have to know that okay, I love this guy, we're going to have a lot of fun, but I'm not going to count on him, because if I count on him, he's going to fuck me over and ruin my life. Billy Ringo is the guy who gets shot going fishing. And one time, we'd all been out drinking, taking pills and carousing, and he wakes up the next morning, and he's all hungover and feeling like shit, and he's sitting there at his kitchen table, and he lives on like a third story apartment, and he's taking a huge long hit, and the phone rings. Of course, back then it wasn't a cell phone, it was on the wall somewhere. So he gets up a little too fast, and he has this massive head rush, and he comes to as he's out the window, but just in time to grab hold of the windowsill and hang on. And so he comes to like that, and still holding the bomb. So he's telling me about it that night as we were drinking and taking pills and crap. And he's telling me the story, and I'm like, man, that wish would have been the most beautiful front page of the newspaper ever. You broke neck, bottle, in that position they're always in the movies, with the bong still in your hand. He said, yeah, some bitch would have been smoking too. So that would have been better than the truth. Save my life. always had a sexy band. Right? But it might have gotten a little bit sexier. We're getting sexier with age. Somehow, I think stems from my childhood, and I saw this movie on the Wonderful World of Disney. It used to come on every Sunday night when I was growing up. It was my favorite show. I love this motherfucking Disney. As T-Bone Burnett would say, Hefner and Disney. And, that was my childhood. I got it mixed up too. And it came on every Sunday, and I just loved it. And back then, you know, Kurt Russell was all fresh-faced and young, and you know, he hadn't been ruined by Goldie Hawn and Escaping New York or something. And he played this fresh-faced college kid in about 10 of those movies, and one of them was called Now You See It, Now You Don't. And Now You See Him, Now You See Something, Now You Don't. And he was like, you know, the geek in chemistry class who invented a formula that makes you invisible. And I just thought that was the greatest shit ever. And so I wanted me some of that. And so I pretended that I found it and I could do it. And so I just spent like the next 5 years being invisible. Actually, I'm not kidding. The other day I woke up and I realized that everybody was looking for me and they couldn't find me anywhere, and I was right there in front of them. And so I wrote this song. It's called Disappear. Thank you. This one's called September Girls. It's a Big Star song.
Stay.
This is another kind of older song that this kind of fits in with these songs, and I wrote this song. This song ended up on my first solo record on Killers and Stars, but I wrote it. It's kind of the same group of songs that I used to refer to as the Heathen songs, and a lot of it became Decoration Day record. But this one fits pretty firmly with these songs because it's another one in family songs. And it's called Old Timers Disease.
Took Thank you.
think we've played this next song on this run yet, and so we're going to pull it out for y'all tonight because we're just so happy to be in Chicago. I wrote this song just as we were entering a second depression. I wrote this song about the old depression, and it's called Depression. Jones with the Lifetime Achievement Award at the American Music Association Awards. I was at Ryman Auditorium, which is just fucking gorgeous, the church, and I was there, and yeah, I'll get stage fright. I live for this shit. I mean, I really do. I love it, and I can count the times I've had like stage fright for a rock show or even or one of these kind of shows or whatever on my hands, and but I was fucking terrified, and I had my speech, and I was really proud of the speech I'd written. It was succinct and right to the point, and I knew it was okay. It would be fine, but at the same time, I'm not one of those people that can just memorize it and whip it out and make it look so easy. So now I gotta read it, and I'm still just like blah, 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 you know. And so you know, I'm standing there, and I get there, and it's like okay, there's gonna be the opening number, and then you go out and present Booker with his award, and then the rest of the awards. And I'm like, that's actually pretty good, because I can do what I gotta do, and then I can go sit back and watch this cool shit, and maybe have a cocktail or two. But at the same time, it was terrifying, and I'm standing there in the wings, and I'm just about to go on, and someone kind of, it's real crowded back there, we're just on the side of the stage, and someone kind of bumps into me as they kind of scoot in there, and I look to my left at who it is, and it's fucking Tom T. Hall. And anyone who knows me at all, or even knows about, you know, what I do, knows that Tom T. Hall's like, you know, he's one of the immortals to me. And I knew he was going to be there that night, but at the same time, I didn't know he was going to be like bumping into me as I was about to go out there. And I was like, I don't want to be that guy. But I can't help it. And so I was like, I just want to, you were my favorite songwriter, and I want to thank you. And he's like, well, thank you, son, you know. And then he turns to me and goes, I remember that Booker T. Jones was here tonight. And I'm like, yeah, that's him over there on the other side of the stage on the B3, and I'm about to go give him an award, you know. And so I walked out and I did my thing and I didn't fuck up too bad, and I got to see Booker and hug him, and it was wonderful. And then I walk off, and I'm walking off, and Tom T. stops me, and he's like, I didn't know you were Patterson. Thank you for singing my songs. And it was the most incredible thing that ever happened. I was just like, holy fucking shit, that's cool. I'm sorry, that's fucking cool, man. So whoever played Tom T. Hall our songs, thank you. I think it was Peter Cooper. Thank you, Peter Cooper. Y'all wrote this song about a friend of his whose wife was an alcoholic. She's a star. A song about having to commit somebody you love. It's called Betty Ford.
I don't want to.
song about my great uncle, my children, my loved ones still here, my loved ones long gone, and yet somehow still here also. I wrote it about a year ago last spring, as my great uncle George Albert Johnson was nearing his 91st birthday. And I knew he wasn't going to have him much longer. George Albert Johnson was born in McGeetown, Alabama in 1920 when President Wilson was still in the White House. And he lived through the Roaring Twenties and Prohibition and the Great Depression. And then he got drafted and sent to Iwo Jima during World War II. And he made it home in one piece. And he drove trucks for 25 years, based out of Springfield, Ohio, for the International Harvester Company. He would deliver the new trucks to the dealers, and then every Friday he would take the Greyhound bus from wherever he left his last load back home to Florence, Alabama, in time to pick me up at school and take me out to the farm where he grew up. And I'd stay out there and ride my go-karts and play my stereo and have the greatest time in the world. And then on Sunday night, he'd drop me off at my parents' or my grandmother's, wherever I stayed at the time, and we would take the Greyhound back to Springfield, Ohio, which was a long, long way. He'd drive trucks all week and repeat it again and again. Born in the living room of the house that he lived in for 88 of his years until he had to live in with Mama. And last fall we were on tour and he passed away. And I went home for the memorial service and I gave a eulogy, which I'd never done before, and I made it through it without breaking down in tears. And then I went out to the homestead and I watched my kids play where I used to play and he used to play. And it was like this song had just come true right in front of me. It's called Heat Lightning, Rumbles in the Distance. Strong beneath this hollow, endless longing.
Thank you. Thank you.
goodbye. Don't you know me better than that by now? I'm not out of wine yet. I hear they've got some more. Show. This ain't your buddy Ron's top 10 request show. I'm sorry, but this is not. I want to send this out to my new pen pal. Obama, he's been writing me so many letters lately. I get more mail from him. I feel so loved. I used to get letters from the President of the United States, and his wife writes me, and I keep expecting the kids to write me. They haven't yet, but Joe Biden's been writing me, and every time they write me, I'm so grateful. I like to send them a few dollars of my hard-earned money because I'm so thankful. And then they write me again. And then to keep them other motherfuckers from getting back in there and fucking shit up again. Way back in the 90s, nobody would sign our band. Nobody wanted us. So we raised the money and put out our first few records ourselves, our first four records ourselves. And a couple of those we ended up just hanging on to. Nobody wanted them early, and so we were able to retain the rights to them. And so those were like the only records we've ever made that we actually get paid for. it's like you buy Gangsta Billy and Pizza Rivers, I get that motherfucking money. I appreciate it. My kids appreciate it. Kuma's kids appreciate it. Kuma's got a bunch of kids. And so and it's never a big check. We ain't talking new car, we're talking fixing the old car. So. But hey, when the old car needs fixing, you're awful thankful. And then our accountant calls us and he's like, well, before you cash that check, you gotta put aside, 35% for taxes because you're self-employed. And I'm like, how do I get the Romney rate? I want the Romney rate. I mean, he made like millions of dollars and he paid like 13, 14% or something. I want the Romney rate. I mean, I'm all about paying my fair share. I'm a self-made man, but at the same time, I drive on roads that other people built, and somebody paid me. And so I'm all about paying my taxes. I like infrastructure. I do. And my wife has pre-existing conditions, so I love the new healthcare law. It ain't perfect, but goddamn it, it's at least getting us covered, which is more than we have to get from those other motherfuckers. And my wife, if something happens to my kids, and I can't afford to feed them and take care of them or pay their medical bills, what the fuck am I going to do? I'm going to have to quit doing this and do something else, and it probably won't pay for it either. So, because I ain't got no degree or nothing, so. I'm drifting off my original topic, but anyway. So I said, what do I have to do to get the Romney rate? He said, make millions and millions more dollars than you make. And so it's like, well, then fuck you. What's the difference? He said, well, that's like investment money. He said, I fucking invested my life into this shit, and I don't get the Romney rate because I'm too poor. So I'm just going to leave y'all with that and sing a song. This is called The Righteous Path. Thank you. So nearly 19 years ago, I moved to an absolutely beautiful, beautiful little town called Athens, Georgia. And I moved there knowing one person, and that was my roommate. And he knew one person, and that was a piece of shit we worked for, who totally screwed us over and shipped us out of about 6 weeks of hard labor when they just filed for bankruptcy and said, fuck you. And then he had the nerve to come over to my house and try to buy some dope for my roommate. And I walked out of my bedroom, and he's sitting there on my fucking couch smoking a bong. And we're like broke. We're like about to get thrown out of there. And I'm like, fuck you, motherfucker. Sitting on my motherfucking couch buying dope and money that you owe me. Fuck you. Get out of my house. But I digress. Because I do that. Thought about that in 20 years, you know, 18 years. And I got all pissed off. That's what happens when you're right here. Anyway, living in Athens has been wonderful. My dreams came true there. And I met all these wonderful people there, and the best friends ever. And I've had an amazing time. And I live right by downtown, which so kicks ass, because me and my daughter can walk up the hill and go buy frozen yogurt and have daddy dates, and we always manage to go to Webster and pick up a record while we're there, and it's always fun, and she helps me pick it out, and then we go home and we listen to it, and it's so sweet, and I can walk to the 40 watt and get as drunk as I want to and stagger home, and it's just beautiful, and But somebody had the bright idea to try to build a Walmart downtown, next door to downtown, which happens to be like between my house and downtown. And it's like I'll have to walk through their parking lot to go downtown when they build it, and if they build it. And you know, if I was a betting man, I'm not going to bet against them because they've got, like, the mayor paid off, and, I mean, it's just ugly. It's ugly around there, and we're all up in arms and all upset about it. And so, anyway, I wrote this song. It's like a love song to Athens, Georgia, because I love it so much, and I don't want to see them taking for granted what we've got, because you drive all over America, and you go to a small town, and you go downtown, and it's all boarded up, and then you go outside of town, and there's like the sprawling, you know, Super Center and Sam's Club and all the other bullshit that you see everywhere. And we've got that too. We've got two Walmarts. One's 3 miles down the very road that they're wanting to build a new one on. And the other one's 5.5 miles the other direction, plus a Sam's Club and a 100,000 square foot empty building that used to be a Walmart that they boarded up when they built one of the new cities. So we're not trying to keep Walmart from Athens. We're just trying to keep it from downtown because our downtown's beautiful. And we've got small home-owned family businesses there that have managed to survive the mall and the sprawl and the Atlanta bullshit that's trying to take us over. And now that ain't good enough. They want to build that motherfucker right there on this little jewel of a piece of land that would make the most incredible amphitheater to showcase our incredible, beautiful music scene that we've got there. It's on the So, anyway, I'm going to quit talking and sing. This song's about all that. It's my love song to Athens, and it's called After It's Gone. Still comes now. Thank y'all so much. This has been a really, really, really extra fun night. Guys, so you can have more fun tonight than last night. So this is really fun. Thank you. Thank you to the fine staff here at City Winery. I hope everybody's tipping them good and treating them good, because they sure have been kick-ass to us, and I'm sure they have to you too. So it's a great night. Again, thank all y'all for coming and for giving us a wonderful weekend in your beautiful, beautiful city. We just love being here. So I'm going to leave you with a song I wrote in a town that I don't like nearly as much as Chicago. And I wrote it at the Highland Inn, and on the back of a Bible. And I wrote it for my wife, and I didn't have no paper. And, you know, those Gideons are so nice. They put Bibles in every room, and those back few pages are blank. And I figured that's where the Lord wanted us to write new songs. So thank you, Lord, and thank you, Gideons, and thank you, my wife, who I wrote this one for. It's called Back of the Bible. To a wedding. Make sure you go out and buy some of Hope for Dudley Summer CDs that are out there. They're wonderful. They're so great. And Jacob Morris has a brand new record that just came out, and we've got them out there. And Jake Gonzalez has some incredible records out there. And of course, our record's not too bad either. So buy a bunch of shit on your way out. And thanks again. Bless you. Good night.